No playing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to D20 Dudes, the tabletop role-playing podcast where the die decides on the next victim. I am the Anarch, Dylan.
I'm the Jenny.
Word. Okay. Today we're going to be talking about Vampire the Masquerade. 5th edition specifically. I haven't played it enough for it to be my favorite game ever, but it definitely is a strong contender for the spot if I get the chance to, like, really go into this. Because, boy howdy, I really like it.
This is the game you were like, you two will be making characters for this game when I come to visit. You have no choice. I don't care if it's your apartment. You have no choice.
You know, I hear Tenra in the background going, you're cheating on me.
Traitor.
All the time these days.
You will be slain for your transgressions.
You used to preach the word of TBZ.
I still do. Oh, yeah. Like, anytime if I'm going to be talking about, like, tabletop stuff to, like, people I'm, like, just meeting or, like, I'm getting to go to, like, a new place and, like, talk about it, yeah, I absolutely still go absolute ham on Tenra. It's actually, like, my goal if I can, like, start getting more consistent, like, usable time during my day, like, if I get to move to first shifts or whatever, I'm going to start going to my local game shops and just, like, getting a whiteboard that says, ask me about Tenra, and just hanging around until people show up and ask me about Tenra.
That's going to be great.
This reminds me of the meme of that guy just sitting down who, like, says,
change my
Tenra
mind.
Bancho Zero is the best thing ever. Change my mind. Yeah.
Basically, though, that's what I'm going to be doing. Tenra's great. Vampire, also pretty great. Again, haven't had a whole hell of a lot of time to play it. The characters are so interesting because you get to go so in depth, like, not just about, like, what your character can do mechanically, but, like, who they are actually as a person matters so much to the game.
Oh, absolutely.
I love that about it. So, to start us off, Vampire the Masquerade, we will be specifically talking about the 5th edition. That's the stuff that's available locally to me. It's part of the World of Darkness setting, and that's been around for a long time. A long time.
Think they ever have crossovers with thirsty sword lesbians?
Probably not, given that thirsty sword lesbians is very recent.
Couldn't there be, like, a systemic multiverse where various systems cross over and work in tandem?
Look, do you think this is DC or something?
Yes. Or D&D quite. And Pathfinder and Tenra into a blender is something altogether better.
Anyway.
I'm going to leave D&D out of that smoothie.
Okay, fine. Forget D&D. Put the lesbians and the vampires in there instead of T-Z.
And a little dash of blades in the dark. We need to sell ghost drugs to kids.
And glory and honor, or whatever that one was called.
Wrath and glory? Yeah, that game's dope.
Yeah.
I see how it is. You guys just don't want to. Part of my game.
I have issues. I've had issues with D&D for a while. Like, I think, and this is something I plan on talking about, like, in the future, probably pretty soon, honestly. I've had problems with D&D, like, even before all the OGL nonsense. Like, so many people, they'll go into it and they're like, oh, I've been playing D&D for 15 years and I've come up with this complex set of homebrew rules to do these specific things. And it's like, bruh, there's just other systems out there that already do that, that are heavily play tested and work really well. Like, D&D, especially 5th edition, I think if it's your first time playing tabletop, go for it. You're going to have a great time, especially if you have a good GM. They're going to do good, and it's cool. You're going to learn about tabletop. You're going to have a good time. Once you've done that for a year, maybe 2 years, 3 years, whatever, once you got your feet wet and you know what it is about tabletop RPGs that you love, find a system that does that really well and play that.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, what is OGL?
It is the Open Games License that for a long time it's been like anybody can use D&D and their setting and their rules to make like homebrew modules and stuff like that and be able to sell them. And recently, you know, Wizards of the Coast, under their parent company Hasbro, have been being real butt stink about that and trying to, like, heavily crack down on that stuff so they can monetize literally everything and own literally everything.
Wasn't Games Workshop doing that semi-recently as well?
Yeah, GW's still, like, there's a lot of people still railing against them. Unfortunately, like, it seems like their plan has worked. What GW's big thing was is they really cracked down on, like, a lot of that fan content. You couldn't do anything that had any kind of Games Workshop licensed content in it without getting either cracked down or having to be pulled directly underneath their employment. And the idea was, like, hey, we're going to move out of just being this tabletop war game, and we're going to make this into this broad intellectual property that can be licensed out to everything. And because of that, now there's, like, there's Warhammer 40K Magic the Gathering cards, there's Warhammer 40K Marvel Comics, there's, like, all these different, like, crossover properties and stuff, and the unfortunate circumstance is they seem to have gotten away with it. Yeah, they really did kind of, like, step on their own fan base to make this happen, but because of the fact that they managed to get 40K out into these larger intellectual properties, it did bring in a lot of new people who don't really... they're just not aware of, like, the kind of shitty situation that occurred to make it possible. And it kind of just got swept under the rug as a result. I'm still very salty about them. And I actually boycotted buying any models from GW for, like, a year and a half. I was so mad about it. And I love 40K. I've got, like, 4 hours worth of me just babbling on about 40K on this very feed.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Cool.
Anyway.
So, I mean...
the vampires and blood and... mystical powers.
Yes. So it's part of Vampire the Masquerade is part of the World of Darkness setting. And in terms of 5th edition, it's Vampire the Masquerade and Hunter the Reckoning are the only games who have made it up to 5th edition so far. And these are the only games. I'm really only familiar with Vampire yet. I do want to get Hunter. I believe Werewolf the Apocalypse is meant to come out in 5th edition sometime this year. Very much looking forward to that. But... there is a much larger setting going back, including things like Fae the Changing, or something. I don't remember exactly what the Fae one is. Or it's like Changeling the something or other. But you play as Fae. There's like Mummy, Mafia, Demon, Mage, like Wizards. Like there's this all these different like parts of the setting. And if you go back to like the 20th anniversary edition, which is like a bunch of like re-releases with some like slight rule tweaks and compilations of changes and stuff from older editions. It's very, very heavy on like how much crossover content you can do, where you can have a game of vampire where you go like face off against werewolves, or you can have a game of mage where you're trying to infiltrate a vampire coven. These kind of things very easily done in some of the older editions, but the newer ones, while they run on the same base system and you can kind of tweak things to work, it's going to be some work to get it done to move things up to 5th edition, because in 5th, you're generally weaker than the previous editions of games, because they really want to focus more on like slow growth and the human element of like you're struggling to find your place as a new part of a world that is very old.
Interesting.
I think it works. I think they hit the nail on the head with it. So Vampire is an incredibly, incredibly large property.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Thirsty Sword Lesbians, it's a small book. And we basically covered everything about it in those two episodes. Vampire is going to be one of those things where I'm going to start adding things to the list that are just specifically about Vampire, because it's going to take me so much time to cover everything. Do not expect this episode to be comprehensive in any way, shape, or form.
So this will be kind of like an overview? Like
yeah, this
general...
is very much going to be an introduction to things. Okay. So mechanically, the game functions in a very simple way. It is a D10-based system. You have a set of attributes and you have a set of skills. You will build a pool to perform a check out of usually a combination of an attribute with a skill. So say, for instance, you're in combat and you want to shoot somebody. It will likely be dexterity plus firearms to be able to properly aim at your target and then use the firearm appropriately. You will then roll a number of d10s equal to the sum of the attribute and the skill. So if, say, you've got a 3 dexterity and a 2 in firearms, you would roll 5 total d10s. Any result... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is that to make a hit?
Yeah, that's to determine how many successes you're going to get. Like, that's your whole dice pool. And it's there's really not, like, a whole, like, 2-hit, like, how much damage do you do? Like, it doesn't really function that way. It's very narrative in the way some of the mechanics work. And there can be some very mechanics-heavy elements to it. But for most things, it's like you're going to set a target number of successes, and as long as you meet them, you do the thing. But in terms of combat, it can be like, you know, they can have some kind of defensive value that you have to hit to be able, like, that's going to be the number of successes you have to hit. And there is, like, damage tables, but they're very vague. It's going to be like, this is a small weapon, and if you hit, it's going to do this much damage plus whatever your strength is in terms of, like, melee weapons, that kind of thing. Or if, like, if it's a firearm, it'll be like, if it's this caliber of firearm, it'll do this much damage. If it's a higher caliber, it'll do this much damage, that kind of thing. So combat is really meant to be kind of loosey-goosey. In fact, the system even specifies that combat should never go more than 3 rounds. If you get to the 3rd round of combat and there's still people, like, fighting and, like, there's still a need to, like, continue things, it suggests, like, pick a side that has basically one... And they succeed. Either they run them off or the other people surrender. That kind of thing's going to happen because it doesn't want combat to drag on. It doesn't want it to be a large, just, ugh.
So it's more for the role play and less for combat. So if you want a system that is heavy in combat, this is a system.
Yeah, it's not going to be the most mechanics heavy. There are certain things you can do that can, like, make a lot of use of mechanics, but that's really not the purpose of the system in its entirety. It's really meant, it's called the storyteller system, and it is called that for a reason. You're telling stories.
Very streamlined.
It's been a lot of fun. I have enjoyed what I have played very greatly. That being the base, for Vampire, there is also what is called the hunger dice. As a vampire, you have what is called a hunger value, which is determined by your usage of your vampiric disciplines. How old and how powerful of a vampire you are will determine your base hungers. Like, most characters you're going to play as are going to be the younger generation. You can either be an Ancile, where you're maybe 100 plus years old, but you're not like an ancient vampire. And you're a little bit stronger, but not by much. Neonate is mostly where my comfort zone falls, where, like, you're a pretty newly made vampire. You're, like, maybe 50 years old into this thing, tops. And then there's the Thin Bloods, which are very, very recent. And Thin Bloods, like, they're almost equivalent to what you would call a Dampier in other systems, where they're kind of a half vampire. They can walk around in the day to some extent. They're, like, at that halfway point between human and vampire. But they have some unique things they can do with, like, the Thin Blood alchemy and things. But with the way hunger works, for every hunger you have, one die in your pool will be changed to a hunger dice. So any result you get that is a 6 or above is a failure. Or, I'm sorry, a success. That was... Any result you get that is a 6 or above is a success on the die. Any result that you get that is a 10 is a potential critical success. And the way critical successes work is if you get 2 of them, they pair up, and each of those successes now count as 2 successes each. So you have to get at least 2 criticals, at least 2 tens on a die for it to amount to anything, but then it doubles those values.
Okay.
What the hunger die will do, normally rolling a 1 is just a failure on the die, but rolling a 1 on a hunger die gives it a chance of being a bestial failure. And rolling a 10... on the hunger die gives it a chance of being a messy critical. So what this means, if I rolled a critical, but one of those criticals was on a hunger die, that becomes a messy critical, wherein you do the thing, but you do it in a very messy, bestial kind of way. Like, maybe you didn't gauge your strength very well on that punch, or even, you know, the beast in your blood takes over. during that punch, and instead of knocking somebody out, you splatter their skull. Now there's blood and gore everywhere. You've got a big mess to clean up. That's what a messy critical is. A bestial failure means that that same beast in your blood can cause you to just fuck it up royally. And that can be anything from, like, you not only don't make your stealth roll, but instead your hunger means you go out of control and you, like, run over and start attacking somebody. Or it could even be something that throws you into a hunger frenzy, or could force one of your clan compulsions to come out. And we can talk about those in a little bit. But, like, these hunger dice make it so that doing anything has the potential to be very damaging, despite whatever degrees of success you may get.
Yeah, sounds like it. It sounds like you just kind of want to be kind of middle of the road with that hunger die. You want to succeed, but you don't want that critical for most things.
Yeah. So reducing hunger, you do that by feeding.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone has a minimum hunger of one. And you cannot get rid of that hunger without killing the person you're feeding off of. If you completely drain someone dry, you get rid of that last hunger die.
Okay.
But now you've killed somebody. And this game functions a lot. So we talked during Thirsty. We talked during Thirsty Sword Lesbians about that whole, like, you know, set your boundaries, have the X cards. These are the things that you absolutely do not touch. Vampire has that same stuff in the book. Like, it, those kinds of things, I think, really just need to become, like, best practice. Like, that should be something you do in any given game, especially if you're unfamiliar with the group. Figure out, like, what are boundaries, what are some topics you absolutely do not touch, and you just don't hit those walls.
Right.
Don't go anywhere near them. Vampire wants you to do that, and in Vampire, it's a very, very important to do that. Not only because, you know, you're playing a game and you want everyone at your table to be having a good time and be comfortable, but B, because Vampire and the World of Darkness setting in general is an incredibly grim, dark kind of setting. You're in there to specifically find limits of the characters, what they define as human, and push them up to those limits and see how they react to it.
Right. Right. It can be pretty, like, messy if you don't put some boundaries.
Yeah. So that's why the, you know, draining someone dry is a necessity for reducing that final hunger becomes an issue. Because from there you have things like personal convictions as a character. Things that are like, I will not kill, or blah, like, you know, I will never do drugs, that kind of stuff. You have these personal convictions that tie you to your humanity, who you were before being embraced, as it is called in Vampire the Masquerade. And you also have chronicle tenets, which kind of are like the groups and your current game and the current settings kind of idea of, like, what should be representative of you being still human, and what are the limits and what will make you pass those limits. And slip further into beasthood. So as a result of those, like, you really do want to talk about what is and is not going to be appropriate for the group because of those kind of things. And those are the kind of things that, like, messy criticals and bestial failures can force you to confront. Make sure, like, if somebody says, hey, no rape in the game, guess what? Doesn't matter what the setting is like. Ain't gonna be no rape in that game. Ain't gonna do that.
Yep. Like, I've heard some people, they're like, look, can we just not have dead children, please?
And yeah, stuff with, like, kids, yeah, no. Is like, yeah, stuff with kids is the one I very commonly run into. And, like, yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
That's a very reasonable one.
Absolutely.
So in terms of, like, who your character is and what they're capable of, you are what is called kindred. The word vampire, especially to the older kindred, is akin to, like, a racial slur to them. It is something that the kindred themselves claim to propagate as a term, like, oh, this is how the mortal, the kine, as they are called in the setting, are going to refer to us. And basically, all mortals are being fed disinformation so that they don't actually understand the nature of the kindred. So if something comes up and like a kindred is exposed and some mortals are going to try and fight back, the information I have on how to kill a vampire is completely wrong and they're just going to get slapped down.
That's why Twilight was so awful.
Here's one of my favorite things about the setting, because this one hit me like a ton of bricks. Hey, September 11th, 2001, vampires did that. Vampire's right, fault. I read that and I was like, what the fuck?
That's hilarious.
It's bizarre. Dracula's real. Dracula's real and very famous, and all the other vampires hate him.
He's a movie star.
Yeah, they're like, this motherfucker, he breaks the masquerade. So we'll go into like a bit of the broad strokes about that. So after you become embraced into kindred, you're likely going to be one of several different vampire clans. And we're going to give each of the clans their own episode because they're deep.
Yeah.
They're big money. Oh, clans are important.
That's one of the hardest parts of character creation for me.
Yeah. But clans can be varied and just bonkers. It's anything from like anarchs being like rebellious, like we're not gonna let anyone keep us down, we're strong and we deserve to be on top kind of people. Ventru, who are like, we're nobles and we need to act with nobility and rule the kine as their overlords. Tremere are vampire wizards, and that's just their whole thing. They're wizards. They're straight up wizards. That's what Tremere are. And you've even got like the Nosferatu, who are like, their whole vampire curse is just being fuck ugly.
Ugly.
Ugly as shit.
That's not.
Dude, so what clan does Wesley Snipes hail from?
Mr. Snipes? Are you talking about Blade, you dingus?
Yes, sir.
Isn't he a half-blood?
Yeah.
Then he would technically be Thin Blood by this reckoning, which are not a clan. Thin Bloods don't get clans. Their blood is too diluted. But after you pick a clan, it comes down to one of three major factions that generally contend for power in any given area in Vampire the Masquerade. The first and most common is called, oh shit, I just lost it. It was in my brain and now it's gone. The Camarilla, or some people call it Camarilla. But they are basically a vampire shadow government. They are manipulating things in the mortal world from behind the scenes. They are policing as many vampires as they reasonably can. They are the force of law and order, but in a very dictatorial way. They're not the good guys by any stretch. It's power politics all the way up the chain. Everybody's trying to backstab everybody else so they can take power for themselves. But they're doing it in such a way that they are trying to outwardly present, especially to newer vampires, hey, we're the good guys who are going to keep you alive. And they do this through a set of tenets about like hospitality and things of that nature, about who is and who isn't allowed to sire a new child. But the main, the big, the holy shit, we need to talk about this one, everybody needs to know about it, is the Masquerade, as previously mentioned, because vampires do not want humans to know they exist. While even some of the thin-blooded vampires have enough power to easily take on dozens of normal humans with no problem, there are just so many people in the world and so few vampires left that if they were to be completely found out, there just wouldn't be any left. They would get wiped out within a decade, easy. So stealth and deception is the name of the game. The Masquerade means you do not let anyone know what you are, and if anyone finds out, you make them disappear.
Question about the world build. So how deeply into human infrastructure have the vampires infiltrated?
All the way up to the top.
Okay. So they could present a pretty huge threat to humans. Like turning our own, their own weapons against them.
They could, but why would they do that?
Lose their food.
Yeah, they wouldn't have anything to feed on anymore.
I mean, if a cow comes up to you and goes, moo, motherfucker, like, are you going to kill all the cows? No, You're just going to kill that cow.
I'm not talking about extermination. I'm talking about control.
Well, they already.
Again, the problem. Yeah, I mean, they're controlling us from the shadows. The problem comes, like, if they try to overtly control us, like, listen, man, look at the U.S. military. Just look at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we could be like, you bastards, we don't like being your playthings. Bye-bye now. Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. Especially since the Kindred have some very obvious weaknesses. Like,
us to them.
They can't be out in the sun. They will die if they're out in the sun. Fire burns them. Like, most damage, like, most things, like, a vampire can take a gunshot, no problem. But fire will kill them outright.
With all the pyro, fire will dead-ass kill a Kindred. gotta be careful.
While they are incredibly strong, and if they get to jump on somebody, if they're human, they're gonna win. It's, in terms of, like, if there was a war, there's maybe a couple hundred thousand vampires total in the entire world.
Considering there's over a billion humans.
There's just over 7 billion humans in the world now. 7 billion humans versus a couple hundred thousand vampires. Regardless of how strong they are, I think 7 billion is going to come out on top on that.
I don't think it would be as unified as all the human beings tend to not unify on things.
They don't need to.
Oh, no. Humans wouldn't need to. It would just take one country going, no.
It would take probably a couple platoons of the U.S. military saying, oh, switch to incendiary rounds for this one. And it's over. It's done with. The only reason vampires have survived, because they were actually almost wiped out during the Spanish Inquisition. Literally, Kindred were almost completely wiped out by people with nothing more than swords, crucifixes, and torches. And that was back in the days when vampires are what we would call now Methuselah. They were powerful. It wasn't, I can run pretty fast, and I can punch pretty hard, and I'm very sneaky. It was, I can come into your house and control you physically with my brain and have you kill and eat your own child levels of power. Mm-hmm. And some dudes with crucifixes and torches almost killed every single one of them.
Damn.
They not found a way to immunize themselves against their own weaknesses?
No, it's impossible. It's the curse of Cain. Okay. Yeah, there's a whole thing. Like, we'll talk about the Book of Nod at some point, because I've read the whole thing and it's bonkers. But all the vampires believe they are descended from Cain from such great hits as the Bible. But that's just the Camarilla, my friends. From there, we have the Anarchs. The Anarchs are a sect of vampires who believe this Camarilla bullshit, where the people at the top get to step on everyone down below them for their own fun and profit, needs to fucking stop. We're going to rule the humans the way we want to do it. We're not going to break the masquerade, but we're also not just going to shit on each other for fun. And we're going to let things be a little bit more chaotic and a little bit less rigid, because we're powerful and we deserve to acknowledge that we're powerful. The Camarilla and the Anarchs do not get along.
I wonder why.
It used to be that the Anarch movement was a very small thing, but especially, so remember how I said the vampires caused 9/11?
Mm-hmm.
That caused a bit of a stir, because do you know what about that?
It was Anarchs.
The humans. No, it wasn't the Anarchs. It was the Camarilla.
Oh, God. All right.
One of the higher-ups in the Camarilla decided to start using their connections within the U.S. government and overseas agencies to cause a bunch of things to happen. It backfired, causing the terror attacks, which, like, the point was, like, the terror attacks were meant to kill several other Kindred who were within the tower, and, like, you know, their politics and their backstabbing, that kind of thing. But the humans figured it out. So now there's what we call the Second Inquisition. There is a group of humans who know that there are vampires. And because of that, there have been things like London was one of the biggest Camarilla strongholds in the world, and it fell. The Camarilla was driven out of London. And from there, the Camarilla got weakened. There's like a lot of places in the world now where like the Anarch movement, they figured like this is our time. This is when we strike. And it works. The Anarch movement has become much larger and they've managed to take large holdings. And they're maybe not as secure as whenever the Camarilla had them. But the fact that the Camarilla lost them means that the Camarilla is also not as secure as everyone thinks they are to begin with. So now, like, the Camarilla leaders in a given area, like, it's usually the person who owns all the land and has control of all the kindred in the area, at least theoretically, is called the prince. And the Anarch has set forth barons, which are their version of the prince, basically, and how they're dividing up territories. Now, the third major sect is called the Sabbat. The Sabbat are crazy assholes who believe ain't none of these politics and hiding and shit even matter. The Methuselah, and especially the, what are they called? Oh, this another word completely obliterated from my brain. The Antediluvians. There we go. Who were the original founders of the vampire clans. The big boys. The badass boss bitches. They believe that the Antediluvians are going to wake up and destroy the world. And their entire purpose is making that happen. That's all they want, is to drown the world in blood, to wake up the Antediluvians and set the world into what they call the Gehenna War, wherein all of the humans and all of the lesser vampires get devoured and only the Antediluvians remain to reign over a dead world.
Some people just want to watch the world burn.
They are generally considered vampire terrorists.
No wonder.
There are, of course, like smaller sects of things, like, you know, some groups that, you know, have their own beliefs or whatever. There are like vampire blood cults who may worship strange gods and things of that nature. And this is all only vampire stuff. This whole setting, if you get into the World of Darkness as a whole, it's absolute clown shoes. There are werewolves. There are mummies. There's a fucking fast food chain called O'Tolly's that cooks demons into their burgers. And it is owned by the same parent company that brews beers that also brew demons into their beers to subtly influence people to beat their wives and cause negative influences and emotions. So to try and fight werewolves.
What? You see, I thought it was going about like waking up some greater demon or something. Not, oh no, it's so we can beat werewolves.
Yeah, it's because what? They want to like awaken these horrible ancient wraith spirits that are the ancient enemies of the werewolves.
Oh my god.
Reminds me of that one guy who was on Fox News and was talking about how there was something in the water that was turning the frogs gay.
Fuck that guy. He an asshole.
That's okay. In this case, it's fast food and beer that's turning people into
murderous wife beaters.
Yeah.
Yeah, shit's been it. We barely covered anything.
Yeah,
and we're 35 minutes in. We're at the end of our time, and we've basically like babbled an incoherent mess. So, Vampire's nuts. It's very grim, dark D10 based system. Super cool, very fun to play. Lots of different clans. Do you guys have some final thoughts or questions you want to ask to try and bring this shit together?
Will next week be a continuation of the overview, or will it be something new?
I'll roll for it. And like, all I've right. already got some of the clans. I've got some of the clans on the list, and we'll have some stuff where we'll talk about mechanics. We might do what we've done with a couple other systems in the past and build a character to demonstrate the process.
All right.
And vampire characters, they're not terribly complicated.
No, they're not.
Are the Belmans one of the clans we'll discuss?
No. See, that's a different intellectual property entirely.
I know you're disappointed.
Perfect time to inject Castlevania into dudes.
See, Castlevania would exist as a video game in that world as well in order to convince the kind that they know how to defeat vampires should they ever come in contact with one, but they'll be wrong.
I'm sure Blade would be that way too.
Yep.
Yes. Blade, the Dracula movies, Twilight, anything that is vampire media is probably specifically made by vampires to specifically disseminate very false and incorrect information.
I need to make a tinfoil hat.
It's aluminum. We don't make foil out of tin anymore.
Aluminuminati?
Shut up. Anyway, thank you everyone for listening. Socials, facebook.com/d20dudes, twitter.com/d20dudes, or @d20dudes on Twitter. If you want to find us on social media, you can hit us up there, and we will answer questions, take episode suggestions, and all that good stuff. Or if you just want to say hello, we've got a link to our Discord down in the description as well. It is open to everyone. Feel free to come inside and watch me be very insane, because I am stupid for a living.
He's not stupid. He just pretends.
I am quite the idiot. We are going to roll some beautiful bean footage and see what next week's episode is going to be about. So, let's see what it will be. Oh, it fills me with glee. Tee-hee-hee. Number 11. The Anarchs of Vampire. I did say I put stuff on the list. So next week we'll talk about the Anarchs. We'll put that in more detail. I've actually got the whole source book for the Anarchs. So we'll talk about them and their vampire rebellion ways next week on next time on D20 Dudes. Bye.
Bye.